Working Cows Podcast, Episode 60.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with a new episode for you. We are looking at the issues related to vaccinations and antibiotics and their place in the ranching industry. We're talking with two farmer feeders, people who are working with a cow-calf operation, as well as guys that are intimately involved with the life cycle of those cows from the time they are weaned and through the time they are sent on to the next phase in the process. And so they're dealing with these cattle and they're trying to keep them healthy and all those things. They've got the experience and the know-how to do this. And so this is going to be laid out a little bit more in detail as we intro the guests that we're talking to, Josh Siebesma and Calvin DeBoer. But it was in response to a discussion that I hope we will be able to carry on as well with another future guest of the Working Cows Podcast, talking to them about the place of those things in the industry. But we haven't quite locked that down yet, but that's something that I do hope to give them an opportunity to come on and share their perspective as well. So also, one major thing I want to make you aware of, at the end of today's episode, there is a preview of the bonus content that the Patreon supporters of the podcast have access to. Dallas Mount sat down and gave me some constructive criticism on the podcast, and we talked with him a little bit about his future as well, an announcement contained there. So stick around after the podcast. We will have a preview of the bonus content that Patreon supporters of the Working Cows Podcast get. You can support the Working Cows Podcast at workingcows.net/support. There's three different ways listed there in a blog post about how you can support the podcast, so I'd encourage you to check that out. As for now, we're going to get right into this episode with Josh Siebesma and Calvin DeBoer about the issues of feeding cattle and vaccines and antibiotics and their place in the industry. One note from a technical aspect, this whole podcast episode was recorded with my portable recorder that somebody sent to me, and so there are some plosives, or when I say P and B and things like that, that do get picked up and do get kind of overload the microphone on the portable recorder, something that I wasn't aware of during the recording. I think it's only a few times that it really limits things out, so just be aware of that. I'm aware of the situation, but it is a good episode, a good conversation with two guys who know what they're talking about. So here is my sit down at the South Dakota Farm Bureau State Convention with Calvin DeBoer and Josh Siebesma. Josh and Calvin, welcome to the Working Cows Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on again, Josh. It's a pleasure to have you on a first time, Calvin, for my first live two-person interview, so we'll see how this goes. But recording in our hotel room, Josh and my annual tradition of recording at the South Dakota State Farm Bureau Convention. Josh and I are both members of the YF&R committee. Calvin, a past member of the YF&R Young Farmers and Ranchers Committee, and Josh and I sat down for episode 7 of the Working Cows Podcast. And the reason I go into all this detail is because it is germane to the subject of our discussion today, that we were in a panel discussion last night, or observers of a panel discussion last night, where the topic of grass-fed beef came up, and a local hospital who's doing good things for the local farm and ranch economy and local produce and buying as much local meat as they can and those things. But there were some things said that piqued Josh's interest. And so we're going to start out first by giving Josh and Calvin an opportunity to introduce themselves and talk a little bit about their operation, and then we'll get into the panel discussion. And the reason we're going to talk about their operations is because it fits in with what their authority to speak to the issues that we're going to touch on today on the Working Cows podcast. So, Josh, we'll start with you. Could you just tell us a little bit about the operation that you're a part of there north of Platte, South Dakota?
Hey, Clay. So, we're on an operation. We got a cow-calf operation north of Platte. We're running cows, and then we have a feedlot that we're feeding fat cattle in. We're in about 600 head when we're full. So we got, on top of that, we're doing crop rotation, all that stuff there too. But yeah, our main thing is we feed a lot of cattle. So.
And you're feeding the cattle the crops that you grow?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And Calvin, what are you guys doing there?
Well, kind of, I'm Calvin DeBoer. I live over there by Korska, just straight east of Josh, about 40 miles. Our operation is kind of a little similar to Josh's there, but ours, we grow all our own stuff. We got a cow-calf deal and a feedlot. My feedlot, I do a lot of custom feeding. So people buy their cattle, are kind of like investors, and bring their cattle to me, and I just feed them for them and stuff like that. And we just mainly raise corn and hay products, and that's all we feed. You know, we feed that. We buy any other supplements that we need to buy to, you know, feed the cattle that need to be fed there.
And Josh was the instigator of this issue that we had last night at the panel discussion, so I'm going to let him give his perspective on the panel discussion and specifically the chef, and then let him talk a little bit about his perspective of the question that he asked in response to the chef's comments.
Well, that's, yeah, like I said last night, it's kind of a loaded and controversial question that I asked. Throughout his talk that he was going through, the comment of "I am buying grass finished beef" came up, and as I leaned over to my buddy that was next to me, I said "grass finished beef," and he said "yeah." Now, in our industry of feeding, finishing fat cattle, we're feeding and finishing with corn, silage, hay, distiller's grain, and liquid feed. We're able to turn them cattle around a whole lot faster. We love our product of corn-fed beef. We're very proud of our corn-fed beef, I guess. So when he brings up grass-finished cattle, that, you know, we as cattle feeders, I think Calvin can attest to this, we kind of put our hands up and say, all right, you know, and we're all in the same boat here. We're all in the same, you know, our end goal is the same. It's just we don't see eye to eye on that. So I asked the question of why grass-finished beef? Now, it was very interesting because he could have said, well, that's my personal preference, but he went on a pretty, you know, probably a 4 or 5 minute, gave us a 4 or 5 minute reason of why he preferred grass-fed beef. And some of that was, there was some, I guess, some issues that we, I think a lot of people in the room all said, nah, I don't know, you know, it's, like I said, it's a controversial issue. So I guess that's why I want to have, we talked about having this conversation. So.
Well, and if you know anything about Farm Bureau, you know that the emphasis is heavy on the farm and that there are a lot of farmer feeder types in the crowd, and I appreciate Josh's perspective. We're all on the same team. We're all accomplishing the same goal, but we don't have to step on each other on the way up the ladder. You know, we can hold the ladder for each other, hopefully, ultimately is the goal, but we want to facilitate profitable discussions within our industry to make everybody better. And another reality is market demand. How much of the market is requesting grass-finished beef? Where is that market? And how do we? How many animals do we need finished on grass every year in America to meet that demand? And then how many animals every year in this country do we need finished on corn to meet the demand that is being produced by the American consumer of beef products? So, Calvin, could you give your perspective on listening to Josh ask his question a little bit?
The one of the things, you know, yeah, we're all in the same we're all doing the same thing. We're raising cattle to feed America. There's a few different little things that come into play. A grass-fed calf is going to take you, I'm just going to use numbers, it's going to take 2 years to finish. If you feed them with the corn-fed or hay and silage, stuff like that, you could probably do it under 2 years. Well under 2 years. So sometimes, you know, there's things that come up is, in you know, everybody has to do it, borrow money to buy cattle. So you have that too, your time involved in feeding cattle. You can flip a few, you can maybe flip a little bit faster. You can, you know, have a few more calves around, get them gone a little quicker. I have nothing against the guys that do the grass fed. It's like you just said, Clay, it's where's the demand at right now? You know, if you everybody did grass fed, okay, then we would be in that boat where it would all wash itself out. But the demand is so high right now for cattle that sometimes you got to push them a little harder and get more through faster.
And what are some of the things you're doing on your operation to get more through faster?
We do, like when we get calves in, yearlings, calves, or whatever, we'll get them in process. We do implant our cattle on our feedlot. There's been lots of things out there in this. You know, people always say you can't eat something with implants, antibiotics, got to be drug-free. There's a deal, I just pulled it up on my phone, looked it up a little bit ago. An adolescent girl taking birth control pills or whatever is at 93,000 grams. A 3-ounce steak with an implant in it is 1.9 grams.
Of estrogen, that is.
Of estrogen, yep. There's lettuce on there. That was in the 3,000s. You know, so it's not that the implant is going to hurt you. Your implant is supposed to be ran out of the calf before you slaughter it. So that's gone, you know, and so that's just I want to clarify that. We do kind of like Josh was saying, our rations are corn, silage, ground hay, distiller's grain. We actually did start something new this year. We've been doing it since July. We're actually feeding sunflower hulls. They come out of the plant. They take the seed and the oil out of the sunflower seed, and they didn't know what to do with the hulls, so that we had them tested, and they test equivalent to like straw. So we were just using them kind of as a filler, but they're cheaper than a ton of straw. So we're doing that just to kind of cheapen up our rations too a little bit. It's been working great. And we got a lot of big cutting bulls on our yard. They don't get implants, but we just give them corn, silage, and just feed them up that way and turn them into a steer.
And Josh, you guys have been feeding cattle for quite a while there at your place. And what is your ration like? What are some of the things you guys are doing to process incoming cattle and some of those things?
Oh, well, we'll get a load of cattle in. It kind of depends on if they're ballers or not. I say baller, they're, you know, just fresh off the cow being weaned, or if they've been weaned, you know, we run them through the chute. We're giving them basically we're vaccinating to keep them from getting sick. And you know, it's a protocol that we do. Calvin does the same thing, is that we get them cattle in and start the process of keeping them cattle getting sick. Because once you start getting cattle sick, they go backwards and go backwards fast. After that, you know, we start them on a low, like a 48 megacal ration. It consists of a fair amount of hay, or grass, ground hay, that we're putting in there, a little bit of distillers, just getting their rumen and starting to be able to process more food instead of the milk and the, you know, whatever they were eating before, whether it's creep or, and some of them cattle are already on feed. When we're in our barn, like I talked back in seven, you know, episode seven, we got the barn, and them calves at ages about 2 to 3 weeks are already standing at the bunk eating feed out of the bunk. At that point, when we do get calves in, we're starting that process of feeding them, getting them started on a mega cal, a higher mega cal diet.
And you guys have both mentioned given processing them on the way in, giving them implants or antibiotics or both. What are your precautions there as far as making sure that you're following the labels and those kinds of things when those animals come in?
Yeah, we do that. We we don't do like we do that, but we don't do like an antibiotic shot when they arrive. We'll give them their vaccinations they need. You know, you got the protocols that you call for. You know, if you do that, stay on top of them, you won't have to treat sick calves and use the antibiotics. If you just kind of stick to a protocol and hit them when they need to be, you know, hit right away with them, your vaccinations. And then if you do have to pull sick cattle, then you're only treating one out of 100 that are sick instead of giving them all antibiotics when a week or 10 days down the road, you're like, oh, we got sick calves and we got a whole pen of them that are sick. Oh, we forgot to treat them, well, or vaccinate them. That's where you run into some problems there. If you got to, everybody that runs a feedlot that I know of have got a little protocol that you do a certain vaccination program when they show up. Let them, I'm just going to go back a little bit. I'll give you our protocol, how we do it when Josh said ballers come in or newly weaned calves. So we got a couple pot loads of calves in, about 3 weeks ago out of Miles City, Montana. So from there to my house, it was like an 8.5-hour ride for these calves. Pretty good ride. They came to my house. They were tired. They stood on a truck for hours. They were empty. So we give them a bale of grass hay and just let them lay in the pen for 5 days. And then on day two, we started give them a little bit in the bunk, you know, but they still had their bale of grass. So in about 6 days after they arrive is when we do our vaccination program. We start them up. They're fully rested. They're not, you know, their stress is down because when they arrive on day one, they're tired. Their stress is high. They've been weaned a couple days ago. So that just kind of helps them relax, you know, and do it that way.
How do you guys perceive some of the media stories that come out about feedlot cattle and some of those things, and how do you think you're perceived by the American public? I don't necessarily think the consuming public is a huge problem, but there is a narrative that tends to come out a lot in the public, and I just want to get your perspective on it, what you think about it, and then we'll move on to what you think we can do to change it.
Okay, well, I'm going to take this one. This is Josh. Confinement cattle, or cattle that are confined. This gentleman that spoke yesterday made the comment about confined cattle. I have got cattle under a roof in a barn. Clay's been there. He's seen it. I've got cattle standing in a yard outside. Them cattle are not confined in ways that the media wants us to portray these cattle. These cattle in the barn are comfortable, they get bedded, they get everything they need, and the stress is low. My cattle in the yards, they've got plenty of space, they got plenty of space to run, they've got food, whatever they want, they have water. And one of the things that he made, you know, he kind of struck a nerve was that confined cattle, and, you know, he made it, the way he said it was a bad thing. Well, we don't have enough grass in this country to run cattle out on grass all year long. It's not feasible. That's just not how this country works. We've got a lot of crop ground, and that's one of the reasons we put this barn up. This is because we didn't have no place to go with cattle, and we were trying to expand our operation. So we don't confine our cattle are in a pen, but they're not confined, like they can't move. Oh, yeah, they move all over, and they love to run and jump. And I mean, It's fun to turn a bunch of cattle out in a yard to just see them just go frolic around. So that's one thing that I think us as producers, we fail to show everyone else that them cattle are taken care of and they're not stressed in there by any means.
And Calvin, what do you got to add to that?
I completely agree with Josh. You know, there's nothing wrong with both ways, the barns, the outside. But there's younger generation coming up, and they can't buy land, but they can buy this little acreage, and I want to feed cattle. Well, I have 10 acres of land, but I want to feed cattle. Okay, I can put up this barn like Josh has, and I can feed 600 calves or so, or whatever you can put in a barn, whatever size you put up, And you don't need all that land to run them cows or calves or whatever you put in your barn. It's land is hard to get a hold of. I mean, I'm in my 40s. I've been trying to buy land for 10 years. It's not going to happen.
It's just not there.
There's not there. The guys that do sell it, younger guys don't have the money to go buy it. You can't go out and buy the land if you don't have land in your name to back you up. So it's an up-and-coming thing, I think, even in the hog industry, chicken, poultry. I mean, a young farmer can start with a barn on 10 acres of land. He just got to buy his feed. And there's always feed for sale wherever you go. Somebody's willing to sell some feed.
Especially like this year around our country. We got a lot of rain that we normally don't get. And it's been a rough fall this year just because we're dealing with that. Big, big yields that we're not used to dealing with.
And a lot of water.
And a lot of rain.
You guys both mentioned the temperament or the mood of the cattle. And Kurt Pate said on episode 12 of the Working Cows podcast that you've got cattle that are either on the grow or on the shrink. And stressed cattle are shrinking cattle. He didn't say that. I'm interpreting. Stressed cattle are shrinking cattle. So what are you guys doing to keep the stress level as low as possible on the cattle that you're managing? I'll go to you, Calvin.
It's like when I just said a little bit ago, when you get them in on a long haul, short haul, or what, it really don't matter on how long a haul they had. If they've been freshly weaned, they need time to just rest, find the water, find their feed source. They just need rest. Sometimes we push them a little bit too hard. They just need time to rest, get everything figured out where they need to be, and that's their new home for their next however long you keep them.
And Josh, what about you guys and the stress and managing that? Because that's your bottom line, right? Cows that are comfortable are going to be able to grow and gain better than cows that are stressed. And what are you guys doing to manage that stress?
Well, one of the things when we're dealing with wean calves, and since we don't have a lot of room in the barn, some of the calves will actually run in the barn. And the first year we did that was probably one of the best weaning years we've ever had, because them cattle are in a 40 by 40 foot pen. There's about 40 head in each pen. And them cattle, you know, they get to walk, and them cattle just walk the fences, and they walk into the feed. They walk into the water. They walk into the feed and they walk into the water. Well, after they do that, about 2 days, they're done bawling. Out in the yard, you know, we've got a starting yard that we start them with. Like Calvin, we're throwing a bale out there, getting them cattle just adjusted to where the new norm that they got. When it does get cold, we'll bed the yard a little bit. Just give them calves a nice place to lay down. When we get snow in the winter, we're out there scraping yards. I mean, we love to see the snow because we like the moisture, but guess what? The next 3 days, that's what I'm going to do, is sit in a tractor and move snow. And just gets, for even when in the spring, when it does thaw, you don't have this pile of snow in the middle of the yard that it just, you know, doesn't dry out. So those are probably the biggest things that we do. Keeping them fed, feeding on time, consistency. And as livestock men, you know, our number one goal in life is to keep them cattle healthy and alive in good condition. And that's our number one goal every day, is to get out there, whether it's freezing 20, 30 degrees below with a who knows what wind chill, or it's 100 degrees out there. You know, another thing we're doing for in the summer is I've got sprinklers in each pen that we go out there, and actually I've got a timer set up, and they just turn on every day just to sprinkle them cattle down in the summer. And it all helps, I guess.
Calvin, what can we do as producers to better communicate a message to the American people? You started out with some science-based facts about the estrogen present in everyday food products. What else are some things that we need to be doing?
Well, like this, what you're doing right here, this little radio thing, that's going to get our word out there. There's there's numerous ways we can do it, and we're all lacking of it, is communicating, telling people. They always, I was at a Farm Bureau thing probably about 10 years ago. And I don't remember who the speaker was and says, you better have an elevator speech. Every time you step in an elevator, don't matter where you're at, New York, Chicago, Stickney, Korska, Platte, Rapid City, have an elevator speech. If you don't know the person, start telling them who you are, this is what I do, and this is how we do it. A lot of people, I got a cousin lives in up in the cities, and they said they have people that said their food comes from a grocery store. Yeah, your food does come from a grocery store, but we bring it to the, we get it to your grocery store. They don't think that the meat comes from the cow that we raised. I don't know how you get that word out there. There's my elevator speech. I've done it. I've been on four cruises on a ship, and I mean, I am a massive elevator speech. My wife will sometimes walk away from me because she's like, "You talk to everybody." I'm like, "Well, I got to tell everybody where things are coming and how things are done." That's the way I like to try to do it.
So, are you prepared to give your elevator speech right here on the Working Cows podcast?
My elevator speech is: I always tell them who I am. Calvin DeBoer, Korska, South Dakota. I raise beef. And I says, the beef that I raise ends up on your table. And I had this guy, and we were on a cruise, and we were out in the Pacific Ocean somewhere. And he's like, no, my stuff comes from the grocery store. And I says, yeah, I says, but I raised it. It goes to a slaughterhouse, and then it gets processed. And then it gets brought to your grocery store. He says, no, no, them cows never die. Yeah, it's a way of life. I says, it's the circle of life. And then the guy says, well, what, if that's the case, he told me, where does chocolate milk come from? I'm like, oh, I says, how do I go about this one? He says, does it come from them brown cows? I says, no, all milk is white. I says, chocolate milk is just a little bit of chocolate syrup added to the white milk, and you have chocolate milk. And he looked at me kind of funny, and it's like, oh, like, well, I didn't realize that. And I'm like, yep. And he says, all the milk. I says, we used to milk cows. And I says, that was what we did for years until I went to this other line of work. And that was quite interesting to try to explain to him about all that stuff. And I was pretty exhausted. It probably took me about 20 minutes talking to the guy. I mean, nice guy, but just didn't have a clue on where the food come from.
Apparently, there's a Star Trek replicator in the back of every grocery store I wasn't aware of that is bringing all that food in out of thin air. But, no, I really appreciate what you guys do in producing the beef that ends up in the grocery store and on our plates. Josh, what are you thinking about this idea of communicating to the general public and how we can do it more effectively and maybe help people understand a little bit better about the chain of custody that those animals go through before they end up on their plate?
Oh, that's a story. Everybody wants to hear a story. And being able and ready and willing to tell that elevator story. And I've had a few opportunities to have that, to tell them stories. And one of them was that I was at a campground and backed into my spot to go to my camper, and there's a VW bus sitting next to me with California plates. Now, I'm sorry, maybe I'm being stereo whatever. And I just sat there and I said, I don't feel like, just thinking to myself, I don't feel like getting out of my vehicle, because those folks were sitting right there outside. And, you know, I was going to open the door and they were going to say hi, and I was going to have to say hi and engage with these people. Finally, after about a minute, and I even think I even told my wife that I just don't feel like getting out of the pickup. And she says, come on, let's go. 3 hours later, after an iPad, I got my iPad out. I introduced these folks to a whole new realm of life in a way that they had no clue. And I'm going to tell you, it's rewarding sometimes. It's frustrating sometimes. But at the end of the day, if we want people to know what we do as farmers and ranchers, we got to tell a story. whether it's a podcast, whether it's getting out of your vehicle and talking to these people. Funny story is these people, they were from California. Yes, they were on their way through. It was during our, what we call Dakota Fest. It's a big farm show in Mitchell, South Dakota, this summer. I said, why don't you guys come down and I'll show you around a little bit for a couple hours. I gave them tickets. I said, you come down, I'll buy you supper or buy you dinner. And they showed up. They took me up on it. And I still chat with them to this day, just having that conversation and engaging in people. And a lot, like I said, a lot of our time, us as ranchers and farmers, we're tired. You know, we work lots of hours. We've been in the field for the last month and a half working. I didn't know how many hours. I'm so sick of eating sandwiches out of a lunchbox right now, I don't even know which way to turn. You know, and so those are things that, you know, as farmers, we do need to get out. And like I said, it can happen whether you're on a cruise ship like Calvin or you're at a campground in Mitchell, South Dakota. You know, those are things that, you know, we need to do.
3 hours is a big elevator. I don't know about you, but
that was a long elevator ride. It was good. It was very good. But one thing I guess we kind of touched base on, Clay. We were talking about antibiotics and vaccinations. I want to clarify, antibiotics are totally different than vaccinations. A vaccination is what we do when we go down to the doctor's office and get a flu shot. It's a prevention of a disease that we think we can get. We are giving these calves a boost in their immune system so they don't get sick. I ain't saying they do. After you give them that, they're not going to get sick. It's the same as a flu shot where it's a prevention of us trying to keep them from getting sick. The antibiotic is another tool that we use, just like everybody else gets an antibiotic when we get sick, is that it's a tool to be able to help us treat the cattle to get them better so they can get back on track of gaining weight.
Very good. Really appreciate that. You know, just some logical consistency would be nice, because it's the Democrats, it seems like, that are pushing some of these different agenda items. I shouldn't say that. The left that are pushing some of these agenda items that would be like grass-fed beef and hormone-free and all these other things. But it's also the left that wants to promote birth control for paid for by companies, and it's also the left that wants to make sure that every kid in America gets vaccinated because they want to treat us like a herd, but they don't apparently want cows treated like a herd. So just some interesting things where you see some logical inconsistencies with the way that these things get messaged out to the world. And I really appreciate you guys' time today and your perspective. Any final thoughts, anything we missed or anything else you want to throw out there?
I'd just like to say thank you for doing this. Getting another 15, 20 minutes, whatever you've been on here, it's just getting some more word out there and telling the public what's going on.
Josh?
Yeah, I don't get to listen to them all, but I've enjoyed them. I've enjoyed the friendship of you, Clay, just being able to chat with you about some of these issues. And, you know, we're not trying to be out there to, you know, harm anything. We're out there working our butts off to make, We want to take care of them cattle. We want to do our best that we can, just like everybody else. You know, we hope that everybody else does in their line of work, their jobs, their careers. And we're going to do it. And unfortunately, we don't usually have the fallback of somebody else to come do our work. So that's why we're busy taking care of business, and people don't always see us on the street. It is nice to get away, you know, especially like this weekend, to be able to just come up here and just kind of let her hair down in a way, and kind of just see other people and see the issues that they're dealing with, and that we're all in the same boat. But we just all got to remember, you know, we're not each other's enemies. We're supposed to be each other's neighbors, and, you know, be able to help each other out when times are tough. And it has been a very interesting year when you look back at our prices. I know there's, you know, we're in a fallen world, and we just, you know, like I keep, you get up, you put your boots on, and you go outside and get stuff done.
Yep, the life of the American producer right there. So appreciate you guys. Appreciate your time today. And we'll look forward to being able to share this message with as many people as we can.
Thanks, Clay.
I really appreciate Josh and Calvin being willing to sit down and talk about those things in a level-headed manner, and really look forward to carrying on this conversation in the future. So now we're going to get to the bonus content, a preview of the bonus content. This won't be the whole bonus episode that was put out in November, but it will be a preview of the bonus content that Patreon supporters have access to. This is me working on the podcast business. Recording, editing, those are working in the business. This is me sitting down with a podcast junkie and the one who inspired this podcast to jump off the starting blocks, and working on the business a little bit, trying to figure out how to do it a little bit better. So here is my monthly bonus content produced for Patreon supporters, a preview of that with Dallas Mount of University of Wyoming Extension. Dallas, thanks for joining me for this Patreon-only bonus episode. I appreciate all of your input over the years and your over the year, I guess. We're only a year into this. Feels like longer, but and your initial inspiration for starting. So thanks for sitting down with me for a little bit.
Yeah, you bet, Clay. Glad to be here. For your Patreons, good for the Patreons, by the way. I appreciate their supporting you. And interesting story for you. Got to go to executive link meetings here over the last month and a half. And a lot of the folks in the EL program, I'd be walking into an EL meeting and somebody says, "Have you guys heard of that Working Cows podcast?" And then somebody else told me, "Hey, Dallas, I heard you on the Working Cows thing." I think it was probably three or four different occasions, separate disconnected occasions, that your podcast was brought up among that crowd. So you're certainly getting some play in that group.
Good. Well, that's what I'm shooting for. Yeah, it's been really interesting. You know, I kind of set out with a goal of producing a podcast that was interesting for beef, you know, cow-calf producers especially. And the number one consuming state is Texas. And then I started to look at that, and I'm like, well, what are the top five beef-producing states in the country? And it's pretty regular that they're at least in the top 10 of the states that are downloading. And sometimes it works out that I get all five of them. Never, I haven't seen it in order yet of calves produced, but I've had all five in the top five of those who downloaded an episode. So that's been fun.
Wow, cool. That's neat. Hey, can I share my news with you and your group?
Absolutely. I was hoping we would get there.
All right. I've made it known I'm leaving UW Extension, and I'll be buying the Ranch Management Consultants, the company that runs the Ranching for Profit School. That deal is going to be official in October, but over the next few months, we're going to be working towards that in a transition. So it's an exciting thing for me. I'll be the third owner of that company. So Stan Parsons started it. Dave Pratt bought it from Stan. Dave's been running it for the last couple decades. And I'll be taking the reins here in October. So it's going to be a year of transition, and excited, and looking forward to it.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's cool. And will it stay in California? Will it move to Wyoming?
We're going to move the headquarters to Wheatland. So my wife and I are going to continue to live here, and our kids are in high school now, so they'll certainly finish out high school here. So we're, you know, kind of in the early stages of starting to put together staff, look for a building, do those kind of things. We're going to be going over and spending some time with Dave in April and having his staff walk us through everything they do. And
so I think that's a good transition. I myself am going through a transition. Started at a new church out between Newell and Faith, and I'll be there every Sunday starting in January, and then after my kids are done with school this year in Belfouche, we'll move out there and be there full time in the neighborhood. And so I've got some things to look at as far as my position in the ranching industry and those things too. But how would you say the Working Cows podcast has grown, or how's it been handled so far? Some constructive criticism, if you will, since we've been through 50 57 released interviews now, I think, and or I guess 59 with my bonus episode that I just released this week. So any thoughts, constructive criticism, ideas?
Yeah, I do.
I appreciate Dallas being willing to sit down and give me some pointers and give me some things to think about and some things that maybe we could switch up a little bit, and I look forward to thinking about how I can implement those things in the near future. So the future of the Working Cows podcast, the immediate future, is that I should have a bonus episode out this week, another one of the South Dakota Grassland Coalition bonus episodes. This time I'm going to be sitting down with Joe Dickey, the photographer and videographer of the Our Amazing Grasslands videos. So really look forward to talking to him about what this whole project was like for him and how it has changed his perspective and some of those things. So that's going to be a bonus episode unless I can't find somebody else to record an episode with between now and the end of this week. If I cannot find someone, I might have to push that one back to being episode 61. Or it'll be episode 61 one way or the other. It'll either come out this week as episode 61 or it'll come out next week as episode 61, but not a bonus episode. So keep your eyes peeled. Go ahead and subscribe, workingcows.net/subscribe, so that you don't miss them, so that you're not having to go and check the website to see if they're out. You'll just, boom, get it automatically updated right there in your podcast catcher, whether that be Apple Podcasts or Overcast or Pocket Cast or the one that I use, Podcast Addict, whatever you use, it'll just be right there if you go to workingcows.net/subscribe and subscribe wherever you want. So keep your eyes peeled for another episode of the Working Cows podcast, whether it be a bonus episode or a regular episode next week.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.